We've all been there. The juggle struggle. Trying to find balance between all the things we have to juggle in our personal and professional lives, and often feeling guilty for not reaching that balance. Well, what if I told you there was a way to blend business and personal lives together without compromising your values? Welcome to the Hot and Healthy in Business podcast, bringing you the secrets to burning bright, not out, in business. I'm your host, Belinda Hite, best known as Bindi, Creative Communications Director for Hot and Healthy in Business. Join me for courageous conversations with experts, thought leaders, and business owners about smart, practical strategies for women in small business. Tamara Lur is a wife and mother of two who started her first business at the age of 19 and has become globally known as a leading wellness entrepreneur. As an ethical entrepreneur, she has spent her life making disruptive change for good, and now she's encouraging other women to leverage their personal power for global impact through her book, Balance is BS. Welcome, Tamara, to the Hot and Healthy in Business podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Finally, we did it.
Yes. Finally together at last.
Yes.
Now, it's been a long time. Actually not a long time since I've seen you, but I can remember like a long time ago. I'm not going to say how many years because it'll show both our age. seeing you perform at a halftime at a Broncos game in Brisbane. And back
really
then.
Really there?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And I was in radio then.
Towns.
Yeah. And, yeah, it made me sit up and pay attention. and I actually got your album after that, believe it or not, and
wow.
Played it to death. And now more recently you're popping up in entrepreneurial circles making your mark. Can you tell us a bit about your background and how you went from being a pop performer to a multi-million dollar entrepreneur?
Oh, that's really hilarious.
Funny,
I had
isn't
no
it?
Idea that you actually had my album.
I so did.
I'm just coming to terms with that one first.
Yeah.
Well, and it kind of wasn't overnight either. I think, God, what was I in my early 20s when I was doing that? Now
yep.
I'm in my early 40s, so
yep.
We are going back a long time.
Yeah.
but I mean, at the end of the day, people go, oh my God, you're like a metamorphosis.
Yeah.
You're constantly doing different things. But when you boil it down, because if you've read the book, it's all about values, right?
Yeah.
One of my first value is creativity. I've always been creative.
Yeah.
I was born drawing. So, and you know, singing and poetry and all that sort of stuff, because I'm actually not a singer, I was a songwriter. So all of those, art, which is what I studied at uni, I did a fine arts degree.
Yeah.
Much to my parents' disgust. but that's all the creative stuff. So I've always done things creative, and I actually think entrepreneurialism is super creative because the number one thing we do is solve problems.
Mm.
So really I look at it as I've always stayed with the same thing and I refuse to grow up maybe. That's another problem.
So how did you get into entrepreneurial circles, like after being so creative? Like what made you get into business like that?
I've always, you know, it's interesting because I've always been interested in enterprise. So when I was at school, I was school captain, you know, did student council president, did all this stuff, did lots of fundraising when I was in school. So I really liked the idea of how can I come up with an idea and make money out of it.
Mm.
And then back in those days, it was about, you know, raising money for your council, your school, or for the fundraising. So I've always really loved that. And I'm not really a good employee. I think I was in an earnout once and I walked out early because I'm just not made for that. And
yeah.
I've never really been one. I think I spent 6 months out of uni in another job, so like in a real job.
Yeah.
So I've always had businesses. So whilst I was doing the music stuff at the same time, which is really interesting, I started my company at quite a young age. I think
yep.
I was 19 when I started my agency.
Mm-hmm.
So went out on my own and started, you know, a business, which grew to, you know, a couple of mil turnover, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I was doing that at the same time. But what was interesting is at that exact football game, I had a stage name. Please don't say it because then people will Google me and see me in my pants.
I know it.
So what was funny is I got a call from a client from the agency saying, hey, we've got a booth or whatever you call it, a stand at the football, and your sister's on in the halftime performing. They didn't know it was me, right? So I'm like, yeah. They said, are you here? And I'm like, yeah. And they said, well, get them to wave to our booth and say hi and say our name. And they don't believe that I know her, which is really funny. So at the end of it, I was like, you do realise this is me. Like, they had no idea because I have two different names. So, but Claire is way more fun than Tamara. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, that, you know, I did the two, which was really good because you can't be afforded the flexibility to go on seven-week global songwriting tours if you're working for somebody else.
That's it.
So I've always wanted that flexibility because my second value is freedom. Mm. I don't like to be tied into the 9-to-5 and doing all that sort of stuff. So I just always found a way to do whatever I enjoy.
Yeah. Nice.
But I still didn't want to be a poor artist.
No.
That's the other thing. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad very young and thought, okay, my parents are minors. They don't have money. I don't even think they own their first home. And I said, I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to set myself up as I go through. So I was a property developer at 24. I, you know, bought a block of land and built some units. So, you know, as you do.
Wow. So you were saying you were into drawing and illustration and you did really well in school. You could have, you know, studied law and been a lawyer if you wanted to, much to your parents' disappointment, as you say. But you know, you got into fine arts and illustration. Do you still get to draw and do any of your music nowadays?
I sing nursery rhymes to the children and make up songs in the car. So that's about as far as my songwriting goes nowadays. And I am the office jukebox.
Right.
So I do come in handy for that.
Yeah.
I'm great at karaoke. You want me on your team. So that's about as far as the music side goes. The creativity side, drawing. I mean, I love drawing. Mm. I don't find as much time for it as I'd like. But I find that even just being able to sit down and sketch out ideas, especially when you're talking about startups and creative, I'm very much across the branding. I love all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, I don't know if you've seen Hot Tresses, but there's illustrations on all of them of all the ingredients. I drew those.
Oh, nice.
So I do, it comes in handy every now and again. But I think when you're trying to visualize something and tell somebody a creative brief, there's nothing better than being able to sketch it out. I think that fast tracks
things
a lot quicker than somebody who has to go sit at their computer and be, you know, restrained by a mouse and even a tablet and spend 20 hours coming up with a concept and then you go, no, that's not it. I can literally draw something, sketch it out, and then they can go, no, it wasn't what I was thinking. Yeah, you're on track, and we can flesh it out pretty quickly. So it does come in handy.
Yeah. That's why I've got a massive whiteboard in my studio.
Same concept. Have you used the new whiteboards? I'm so old school.
Yeah.
You know, it's all electronic now. I'm like, no, give me the duster. Let's go.
You need the chalk. Now, you're determined to do the opposite of what is expected. You're a bit of a disruptor in the beauty and wellness industry. Can you tell us a bit about your brands Gutsy and Hot Tresses? And how you decided to invest in them and how they became so successful?
So I think when it comes to doing the opposite, I think it's just really important that you don't copy other people.
Yeah.
There's no room for big business if you're not thinking the opposite. So I always start with, okay, what is everybody else doing in hair care? What is everybody else doing in gut health? And then I always look for ways of doing it the opposite. And most things over time, a bit like anything, becomes overcomplicated. So how do we make things really beautiful, uncomplicated, get rid of all those chemicals, all the horrible things that got put in over the years as shortcuts, and just go back to beautiful, high-efficacy products that actually work? Because that's all we really want, right?
Yeah.
You don't need a 10-page novel on, you know, what is pre and probiotics and how does your gut health. We just want to make sure that we're doing something good for our bodies. So how do we get back to stuff that's really good and serves us? Because where 40% or 50% in Australia of women are now working. We've got to make life easier for ourselves, and we've got to keep ourselves healthy. And unfortunately, we're putting ourselves second, third, fourth on the list. So I'm really about, okay, how do we make life really easy for women so they can have beautiful hair? I mean, today is no makeup day, and I just pulled a bun out. So I've been doing the tennis run. So there you go, makeup free. So, you know, for me, it's all about how do we do the opposite to what everybody else is doing. So with gut health, everything is pharmaceutical. It's like you're sick. Whereas we're like, no, let's have fun with it. Let's make it about proactive, not reactive. So, yeah, that's kind of my approach to everything. But, you know, I've always been a little bit of a shit stirrer. I like doing the opposite to what everyone else does. Maybe that's the country girl in me.
So Hot Tresses, for people who haven't heard of it here in Australia, vegan hair care, right?
Yeah, so all my stuff has the same mandate. I'm very clear on what I'm passionate about and what products I want to bring to market. And they're vegan, highly organic, cruelty-free, which is really important in beauty, because all the multinationals that sell in China, it means they're tested on animals.
Yep.
And then ethical. So they need to have giving entrenched as a cost of goods, and how they're sourced is really important to me, sustainable packaging, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I'm very clear on the mandate, and then it's in the realms of beauty and wellness and self-care, basically, for women.
Yeah. And the gutsy stuff, I know you've got some pretty amazing chocolate in that range as well.
World first.
Yeah.
Prebiotic chocolate, which is pretty cool. So zero sugar. Well, no sugar additives either. So and vegan, which is cool.
I think you need to stock up on that. Now, what is...
And you can eat as much as you like. Well, one bar a day. It's 40% of your dietary fiber. It's only got five ingredients. Well, and it is really nice chocolate. You've tried it, right?
Well, no, I haven't. You're going to have to send me some down.
What's going on?
Yeah.
You will have some in the mail.
Now, what's been your most challenging for you in your businesses and growing your brands? Like, how do you overcome those challenges?
For me, the biggest challenge, I mean, challenges are opportunities. It's a way to try and work through them. But for me, I think the thing that I probably haven't mastered yet, if we're getting really honest, is how to grow a business and sell it without it needing to be dependent on me. And all the best entrepreneurs in the world say that a brand should go on to be better without you and after, you know, after you leave it. So really that's on my entrepreneurial bucket list after 20 years. I really would like to see something go on and thrive after I, you know, leave. And I'm still involved in a lot of my businesses. So that would be one thing that's really important to me, is how do I create something that's way bigger than I ever imagined and other people, you know, can take it on. So I think business is all about bus stops, and we shouldn't be honed in on, okay, well, you're the founder of the business, therefore you have to be there right to the end. That's not how business works. Everyone's passionate about certain things. I'm really passionate about startups, and I'm not really passionate about board meetings, 20 strong management teams and HR. They're not my passions, and 9-to-5s and all that stuff. So looking at spreadsheets every day and seeing how we're going against projections and all that sort of thing. I love making money, but I like to get it to a certain point. And when the business becomes so big that it needs all that stuff and it needs that sort of CEO, I know that's not my bus stop. So I've got to get off and go, okay, that's for you to play now. Someone else loves doing that stuff. I loathe it. So it's really important that you don't go past your bus stop, because I think when you do that, that's when you start getting unhappy about your job. So these are all things you learn over 20 years, and you know how you learn them? Usually going past your bus stop and being unhappy and having to quit. So, yeah, lovely lessons.
That is such a great way to look at it, going past your bus stop. I reckon I've been past a few of mine, but, yeah, getting better at it.
Well, the thing is not to go past it and then not figure it out and go do it again.
Yes.
Really sit. I mean, I have a business and life coach for a very good reason. I mean, she calls herself a transformational coach. And the reason why is because she'll make me sit in those horrible moments and go, right, what is it exactly that you don't like about this? Let's pull this apart.
Yeah.
I go, I don't want to talk about it. But we have to talk about it, because that really gives you an indicator as to what your values are and where you're out of alignment, so the next time I'm very clear where my bus stop is and I can see it coming and I can start planning for that.
Mm.
And, you know, being assigning yourself to a brand and saying, look, this business is my baby, and, you know, making it your personal brand is really dangerous because that might not serve the business the best. And if you really want the business to go on and make an impact in the world, then your bus stop is going to come at some point.
Yeah.
For Facebook, because he owns majority of it, right? They couldn't get him off that bus if they tried.
I think they're trying.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And the good part of that is that you're actually not just leveraging from your strengths, it's also your weaknesses and understanding what they are and how you can use those to your advantage.
Absolutely. Me looking at a spreadsheet for 3 hours, I reckon a CFO could figure out in 10 minutes. Not best use of my time.
Yeah.
So I just say, you look at it for 2 hours and then tell me in 10 minutes what I need to go solve.
Yeah.
What little measures can I do to turn this business around or to double it in size or whatever it is?
So what are your future plans for your businesses, immediately and in the next 5 years?
Look, I've spent a bit of time thinking about this because I'm studying at EMP in Boston, the Entrepreneurs Masters Program.
Yep.
And the whole thing is talking about what is your X factor? Like, what is the business, like the industry that you could go to and just do something that is disruptive and really changes an industry for good? And what I love about the program that I'm doing, it's all entrepreneurs, hand-selected, 60 of us from around the world. And we all basically are there to figure out how can we use business for good.
Mm.
So for me, you know, that's been quite a transition around what is that B game. They call it the B game.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get to $1 billion in value? So, you know, the first million's the hardest. The next one, definitely the 10. And I actually found the 10 probably the same as the one. It's not, you know, it's not like it's harder.
Yeah.
And then there's the 100. And then, of course, there's the big game, the B game.
Wow.
So, and when you're sitting, I know it's crazy. So no wonder it took me 3 years to figure it out. Yeah. Right? But for me, it was really about, okay, how can I disrupt the industry? So we were talking, you get mentors assigned to you, and mine's Jeff Hoffman, which I'm so blessed to have. In fact, he won a Philanthropy Award, which I'll post on my social.
Oh, wow.
I'm very proud of him. He's doing wonderful things. And I would go to him and say, okay, I think I've got the idea. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to invest in this many businesses, and then that's going to be this much turnover, and then we'll impact this many lives. And then he'd go, no, it's going to take too long. That's a 10 to 15-year journey. I want it in 5. And you have to just keep going back and back and back. So I really struggled with that until I figured out, they call it your popcorn moment, you know, where you go, oh, of course. And that was the Dollar Beauty Tribe, which is basically where we are going to give women full-size products. Yeah. So not samples, like the full thing.
Yeah.
Full-size products to trial up front, and all they have to do is pay for the postage. So if you heard of Dollar Shave Club?
Yeah.
Same concept, but for women in beauty. Wow. So imagine that. There's no majors who are willing to say, yeah, cool, take this Elizabeth Arden cream and use it for 30 days and see if it works, and only pay for it if it works. I mean, that would probably be called shoplifting.
Wow.
So we're basically giving women the chance to try beauty up front.
Yep.
And they're only ethical brands. And my big, big aim is to have around, imagine if we were having everyone switch their buying behaviours, women, even just half of them. It's a $50 billion industry.
Mm.
So if we were to get 1%, 2% of them to just change their buying behaviours to products that are female founded, which is really important because 97% of the beauty industry is owned by men.
Mm.
And if we were to change it to female-founded, ethical, and buy one, give one, every time they buy a product from us, if they choose to buy it after 30 days, we're going to be giving to buy one, give one.
Oh.
And then that's massive.
Yep.
You think about all the beauty products that are bought every day. Mm. Imagine if giving was entrenched in every one of those. We could fix so many world problems. So I went back to Jeff and I said, Jeff, I think it was about my third attempt. This is what I'm thinking. Have you heard of the Dollar Shave Club? I want to do this in beauty and give people the trust back to the consumers. And I did my big thing, and he says, you're onto something. That's smart. And he's going, okay, let's do it. So it's almost hard for me to verbalize it at the moment because yeah. it's still such a big BHAG, you know, big, hairy, audacious goal.
Yeah.
It almost overwhelms me every time I have to verbalize it. But that's the game I'm playing.
Yeah.
And that's exciting for me.
So you've got to give
that a shot.
So you're going for the big B within 5 years?
Trying. Yeah, why not? You can always go back to what you're doing.
Yeah. Either way, you're winning.
I've got some beautiful people around me playing that game. So, I'm excited to see what we can achieve.
Oh.
Women don't underestimate their purchasing power.
Well, I look forward to celebrating that one with you.
Oh, yes, that is a party. That's a big, big party.
Yeah, I'm in. Now, chatting with other entrepreneurs recently, they've told me that fast growth and success can often be challenging in a way that it actually pushes people away when they shine a bit too bright. Is that something that you've experienced in your success?
Yeah, Tall Poppy is alive and well in this country.
Yeah.
Very much so. And it's interesting because, as you know, I do most of my selling in America.
Mm.
80% of my revenue now comes out of America. And they have the complete opposite approach, right? If you fail, they go, that's not failing, that's learning. Keep going, you know, they're good on you for giving it a go. Where it's different here. And I think, you know, I found myself, which is really bad. It's probably one of the things, I don't have many regrets in life, but it's certainly one thing that I regret, is I found myself for decades dumbing myself down.
Yep.
And then running away to America so that I could be myself.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not a healthy way to live because you want to show up the yeah. same everywhere. I mean, I can show up in front of my friends and my close friends and everyone who knows me, especially my entrepreneur network and my YPO and EO friends. But, you know, in the general gist of, you know, the playground and stuff, I would find myself dumbing it down, which is really bad.
Mm.
So, and obviously being a female is an issue as well, because if you seem to be doing stuff, it looks like you're compromising family, all sorts of things. You know, there's all these assumptions. So, look, that's probably one thing that I found really hard. And I've always had a mentor and a coach at the same time, and there's a very clear reason for that. And then one of them said to me one day, why are you worried about what the 99% of people think? You do realize you're a 1%er, right? And I'm like, well, I guess. And she's like, you are a 1%er by fact. Your companies are all in the top 1%. You know, everything that you've achieved is within 1%. So let's accept you're a 1%er. Why the hell are you worrying about what the 99% think? She said, come and talk to me when a 1%er has something to say about you. Until such time, we are not going to give a shit. And I was like, oh, okay. So she kind of gave me permission to not care about that. And I think that's really important, because if I'm going to be playing this massive game, there's people who are going to listen to this podcast and probably go, oh, my God, how embarrassing. What is she thinking? Did she just say that she's going to do that? I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I really don't. Like, get your own game, you know?
That's it.
So I think that's probably been a big thing for me. And I think if I had have acknowledged that sooner, I probably would have gone a lot further quicker.
Yeah. Yeah, I always use the Dr. Seuss, you know, those who matter don't mind and those who mind don't matter. Yes. I love that one.
Oh, I love Seuss. What about the places you'll go?
Oh, yes.
That's like an entrepreneurial Bible.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's the whole journey, and then there will be times where it is dark and gloomy.
Yep.
Yes, more than most.
It's all back to Seuss. Yeah.
It is. It is.
So let's talk awards. Now, quite notably, you were a gold winner in the Fast Growing Company of the Year category in the 2016 Stevie Awards for Women in Business. First of all, congrats. Well done, you. Secondly, what do awards like this mean to you, and how do you leverage from them?
If we're being honest, they don't drive me.
Yeah.
In awards. But I think acknowledgement from your peers is really important. So When I was, for instance, asked to be the president of Entrepreneurs Organization, which I'd only been in for 3 years, and there's not that many females. I think it's 20% female membership. That to me was a real honor. So I really like being acknowledged by people that I respect and that I look up to. So when I get acknowledgements from them, I really take that to heart. I think that's really beautiful.
Yep.
But I think there is a place for awards, and I've had to come to grips with the fact that it's worth going for awards when you're achieving these milestones. And the reason why is that it creates awareness.
Mm.
And that's the pure reason.
Yeah.
We need more females out there winning awards, showing what they're doing to bridge that gap, because, now that I'm in YPO, which is an average turnover of 45 million, the percentages are under 10% of females, and we get 2% of all capital.
Mm.
So whilst all of that is going on, I feel like it's almost something we need to be doing. We need to be out there showing that, you know what, we can play this game. And awards is a great channel, is probably the right way to say it. It's a good channel to go out and at least give yourself a PR platform to talk about what it's like to be a female entrepreneur and to encourage others to do the same.
Yeah. And I guess, you're inspiring others as well to reach those accolades as well. So another added benefit.
Yeah, and it was pretty nice. I think I found out about it when I was around my 40th birthday, which was kind of a nice present.
That's a nice present.
And it was New York, so it was kind of fun. Yeah. Not that I went, but they dialed me in, and it was just a really lovely time to be with the family. Yeah.
Now, Balance is BS.
Mm.
It's the title of your book, which was recently released, which I've had a good read of. now, it's all about empowering. Yeah. It's all about empowering women to build a work-life blend rather than balance. You're all about blending, not balancing.
Exactly.
Now, we're anti-burnout crusaders here at Hot and Healthy in Business, and we're curious to know how you recommend we blend.
Look, I think the book is really not about my journey, even though, I share that. It's really about figuring out, and the exercises in the book. Did you do the exercises?
I didn't get to those.
Okay, well, we're going to work through those because they're really important. We need a one-page plan for ourselves, right? Yep. So we know exactly where our bus stop is, what fulfills us. But basically the concept of blending is the opposite of balance, because when you look at balance, you've got family on one side and business on the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's meant to be this whole balancing out thing. And you take from one when you're at work too much, you've got to, oh, God, I've got to spend some more time over here with the family. The problem with that is that there's no self.
Yeah.
And self actually is where it starts.
Mm.
You're no good to anyone as a mother, as a breadwinner, as an employee, as a boss, if you are not good in yourself. So I think just throw out the scales and start again and put them all together. And how I tell people to blend is whenever you're feeling torn between a few things, try and figure out a way to bring those things together. So I'll give you an example. If I am, this happened, my daughter had her tennis finals. There was a really great phone call I wanted to be involved with, which was a pitch in America. And so I rang them and I said, hey, my daughter's final is on. I'll be going to that. I didn't say I would like to.
Mm-hmm.
I stated I will be going to that. I could be at the office, at home in my office and Skype with you and then race to tennis. Or I could actually be in a quiet place, find a quiet place at tennis so I could be there when she's warming up. And if you are okay with the background noise, I'd love to chat to you from there. And then at the end, of course, I got granted permission, which was lovely. And then at the end, I granted them the same permission. And what's been really nice is the last couple of meetings that I've had with them, because they're very corporate.
Yep.
I've heard the kids in the background. They've jumped on the call and said hello. They've, it's just really lovely. And I think we need to lead by example in that way. So, if I can be walking on the beach with a business partner talking about business while our kids are all playing together and running havoc in the ocean, then happy days. We're getting exercise, we're talking about business, I'm spending time with the family, and we're outdoors on the beach. I mean, that's about five things in one, which is great.
Winning.
And we should.
Yeah.
And multitasking doesn't work. It's different to multitasking. That actually has been proven to not work for the brain. So this is all about bringing the things together and giving ourselves permission to blend. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And you got to be happier as a result, right?
Absolutely. And productivity peaks are between 2 and 3 hours.
Mm.
So if we know that, then in those times, go hard, get what you need to get done, put your emails aside, put your phone aside, log out of Facebook, and do those high productivity quality time sessions, and then go and do other things in between. And you'll find that you'll get a lot more done in the day than all these massive amounts of distractions that actually get you nowhere. So I really don't understand why the 9-to-5 concept works. I think everybody could be rotating on hours so that the phones are covered and the customers are covered, but there's no need for us to be sitting for 8 hours. It makes absolutely no sense.
Amen. Amen. Now,
well, look at us. Yeah. We're sitting here at night having a chat.
That's what we do.
You know, I've done 2 sessions of 3-hour works today and makeup free and gone to the tennis with the kids, and now I'm talking to you.
You just answered my next question, because I was going to ask you what a typical day looks like for you.
Yeah, well, when I'm in Australia, it's very much kiddie hours.
Yep.
So I like to take them to school and pick them up. We don't do screen time during the week or computer time for the kids, so it's very much active on the beach, playing sport, all that sort of stuff. And then at night I'll do a couple of hours. But I'm really about I'm a Scorpio, so, I'm very – very present, and I don't do things in moderation. No. So when I'm at home, I am all about family, quality time, the ocean, all that sort of stuff. And then when I'm in the States, I can work a 16-hour day, and I reckon I could still go for another.
Wow.
Another 2. I love it.
Yeah.
I love what I do, so I get energy off that. So I'm very concentrated would be the right word. I like to... I'm like cordial. When I'm here, I'm concentrated cordial on family. When I'm over there, I'm concentrated on what I need to get done in America. So that's sort of my way. But you've got to find what works for you, right? Mm. And for me, I fill up my bucket in different areas at different times. So that's just how it works.
Love it. Now, I know you've got a lot of strategies for blending, which you share in the book, but can you also share what self-care means to you?
Well, self-care, we talked a bit about self and why that's important, but it's basically giving yourself permission to be worthy.
Mm. Yep.
That's all it is. Let's not complicate things.
Mm.
It's all about filling your own bucket and not looking to others around you, like your husband, your friends, your boss, your HR department, your family. Don't look to them to fill your bucket. Mm. You're totally responsible for yourself. And I call this a personal pie. So you, in the book, when you do the exercise,
yes,
you have to think about a time when you were most content.
Uh-huh.
And you find that everyone's pie is different.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm unapologetically, half my pie is work. I love business.
Yep.
And then I can't stand chores. I get very depressed if I've got to do chores. So they're like 1%. Whatever I can delegate, I will delegate. And I don't like to cook or clean. So you won't ever see me volunteering for the Bake Off or anything like that. And I don't apologise. I do turn up with the Coles wrapped stuff. I don't pretend and put them into a Tupperware container. I'm like, yeah, well, these are Coles. So I'm very clear that that doesn't serve me, so I'm not going to pretend. So it's making sure that you've only got so much energy in a day, making sure you put it into the parts that your pie deserve. And you'll always find, don't overcomplicate it, whenever you're feeling a little down or out of kilter or out of whack, if you go back to that personal pie, you'll go, oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not spending any time on time with my friends. And time with my friends is a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, so everyone's life gets busy. So I was like, oh, my God, I haven't spent time with my best friend for ages, because now I live on the coast and she lives in the city. So you know what I did? Rang her up and I said, right, I've got 6 million Qantas points. Jump on a plane with me. Let's get drunk on the plane to LA and just go out at night after my meetings. And we just spent a whole week together. It was fantastic.
Oh my God.
We sat for 13 hours and chatted each other's poor people next to us and just chatted the whole way. It was lovely. And we filled up that bucket. And so I know when I'm out of kilter and I know what to do. I don't ask anyone else.
Oh my God. You've got my number, right?
It's quite funny. That's become a bit of a habit. I don't think I've gone to LA alone in 6 months.
Okay.
And well, I'm there every month. You know, I take someone with me every time. It's so much fun.
You know where to find me.
It's like a little excursion.
In your book, you also talk about not compromising time with your kids just because you're working and blending the two. You've pretty much just explained that blend. Have you got any examples of people who've read the book and they're now blending based on what you've taught them?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. You know, you write a book and you think, okay, everyone's going to have the same sort of outcomes as what you have, but that's what's beautiful about experience share, because when you're not telling people what to do, which is the worst thing you can do is give advice, right? The best thing you can do is share experiences.
Mm.
And if you don't have an experience to share, don't say anything.
Mm.
I think opinions are like assholes, right? Everyone's got one. Just keep it to yourself. So experience share only. And through that, what's beautiful is people will work their way through the book and take something different from it each.
Mm.
So I've had people reach out to me and go, oh, my gosh, you've given me permission to start my business. Or other people have just said, you know what, you've given me permission to go back and renegotiate my boundaries with an employee that I've been with for 10 years. I am not the same person as when I started. I've got way more value, yet I'm doing exactly the same hours and expecting the same sort of things in return for that same position. My salary's gone up, but wages never compensate.
They're
kind of like that, you know, oh, I've just broken up with a boyfriend, eat a whole bucket of chocolate ice cream. I mean, it never really makes up for it, right? You feel good for a little while. It's a bit like wages. At the end of the day, you're still stuck, right? So, you know, it's important to renegotiate that. And I think the great thing is the support that's been outside of it. So Emily, who did the exercises, has set up a social media page where people can come and actually work through how this applies to their life. And sometimes it is a stepping stone. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years and I get stuck all the time.
Mm.
And I've got to go, oh, of course, I can see exactly where I'm going wrong, because I go back to the principles. You know, we're all the same, right? We get into bad habits. It's like going to the gym.
Yep.
We all fall out of it in winter and I'm starting to think, oh, gosh, summer's coming. Look out. So it's the same in our life. Things happen, things get thrown at us, and our priorities get shifted for us. We need to go and take control of that back and then go back into it. So this is a constant exercise. But what I'm finding is a lot of people said that they thought it was quite entertaining, so they got a lot of laughs out of the book, which is funny.
Yeah, you are funny. Media. Yeah.
And a few people said thank you for writing it and giving me permission, because nobody's been willing to say that.
Mm.
And, you know, I think the first step is to get our minds and give ourselves permission, give ourselves a structure from what to make decisions from, instead of others making decisions for us. And then the third thing is going out and practicing blending. And if you just do those three things, life is, you know, going to be a lot nicer for you, which is really great.
Yeah.
So telling it straight is really important. So I've had a lot of beautiful comments, actually. It's been really, really lovely, really lovely. Because I'm not an author, right? I just felt the need to write this book because, you know, we've got to have a shift in our thinking before any more women will join business. So I can't just go out there and say, hey, we need more women playing bigger games in businesses. That just means they're all going to burn themselves out.
Yeah.
So I needed to have this conversation first.
Mm.
And then I'm like, okay, now that we've got our one-page plans on ourselves, we know how to blend, we know the concept of blending, we're all going to empower each other. We're not going to do this crazy crap where we, you know, cut each other down.
Mm.
Then let's all go be a united force and get these percentages up. And I'm not saying women need to run all businesses. I just don't want it to be sitting at the percentages that it is. I think the economy would do a lot better if we were at 50-50.
Yeah. And in the book as well, you talk a lot about women being the breadwinner in the family, and I'm seeing a lot more conversation around that in the media at the moment. The stats are becoming a bit staggering, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, it kind of snuck up on everybody, I think.
Mm.
And I think the GFC had a lot to do with it. A lot of women retained their jobs and men didn't.
Yeah.
So we saw a really big shift then. And, you know, I think also women know that they can do both now. They can, you know, be a mom, or even if they don't, it's not just about parenting, but they know that they can continue to work and do other things that they're passionate about. So them staying in the workforce is really important. And I don't know how we achieved it, though, considering that our wage is like 20% lower. So that's a pretty good effort.
Mm.
It's a really good effort. But the problem with it is none of our behaviours have changed. Yeah. We're actually doing more in the household than before, which is absurd, absolutely absurd. That is not sustainable at all.
Mm.
Heart disease is already the number one killer of us. Why don't we just burn ourselves out a little bit more? It's just, it's silly. So we've got to find a new way for doing this. And, you know, I was having an interview in New York with a radio station, and it was an older sort of lady, and she said to me, you know, don't you find it a bit unprofessional that women, you know, should be allowed to, you know, have their kids and blend and do all this sort of stuff? And I said, well, you know what, it used to be unprofessional to not wear stockings to the office. So some things are just silly and need to be changed, and I'm kind of calling the same thing on how we do business, because it doesn't serve us.
Mm.
It doesn't serve us as women who want to raise families and look after ourselves. I mean, our self-care alone, we've got a lot more stuff to go on. So, you know, how do we make sure that business serves us, not the parameters by which it was basically built, which was the 9-to-5 concept? I don't think it works for us at all. So you know what? And what's going to happen is, if you do want to change that, a lot of businesses won't.
Yeah.
There's in their ways, you know, you can't teach an old dog tricks, as I say. There's still the grey-haired men, you know, concept is very much alive and well.
Yeah.
So, you know, the boys' club. So, you know what, if that's what gives us the push to go out and do something on our own, then I think that's probably a good thing anyway.
Yeah.
We've just got to support each other in that.
Absolutely. So I'm a woman in small business. I have a little business. I've been gifted the opportunity to sit down with you and learn from your expertise. What's the one thing you would say I need to be mindful of if I want to grow my business?
Oh, one thing?
Oh, go for more than one. I don't mind.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to give you my favourite saying from Warren Rustang, who's one of our lecturers at EMP, and he says, you are not a success in business if you fail at home.
Ah.
I love that one. But can I sneak in a few others?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Because success is different for everyone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
For me personally, being successful in business is that, you know, I'm wanting to succeed in legacy. That's my big thing at the moment.
Yeah.
I really want to know that when I'm retired and irrelevant anymore because I can't keep up with technology, that I've made a huge shift in buying behaviours, you know, which would be great. So, you know, I think the goal installation for success for myself would be, you know, entrenching giving into every single sale. That would be my goal installation. So make sure you're very clear on what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fail at home, and give yourself permission.
Okay.
Don't make it complicated. In worst case scenario, what are you going to do? Go back to doing, you're employable.
Yeah.
You know you are. Always go back there. We never do. Mm. We rarely do, but we always have a plan B. So don't live in regret. Wouldn't it be terrible if we get to a certain age and then we go, I wish we had a try.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Now you've got all the entrepreneurial traits. Oh. My goodness.
Yeah, yeah. Look out.
Yeah.
I'll be aiming.
I want to hear more about this business.
Yeah.
We can take that one offline.
Taking that one offline now. So stick around. I'll be heading for my big B too. There you go.
Great.
Yes. So
Kendra Scott's in my class too, and she's just been valued in the top self-made billionaires in America. And she bet Taylor Swift and all sorts of people, and she was in my EMP. She did EMP.
Get
and she
out.
Started on $2 million turnover. So it is absolutely possible.
All right, we're chatting. Now,
hopefully it doesn't take you 3 years to figure it out.
God, hell no. At the rate things are going, I don't think so. So we ask all our guests on the Hot and Healthy in Business podcast what their top five tips are for women in small business. So what are yours?
All right. You told me this beforehand. Let me see what I wrote down. first one is timing and execution. I'm going to get really boring with the basics. Because often that's sort of overlooked. I find a lot of people don't think about that. And it's probably about 50% is timing. So make sure that whatever business idea that you have, that your timing is right.
Yep.
And if not, fail quickly, figure it out sooner rather than later and move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first one. And execution is a big one. Too many people think they're going to be rich on an idea. McDonald's don't have the best burgers. It's all about the execution.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have a really good plan. Work smart, not hard. And, you know, you've got to do both, actually, to be honest.
Yep.
And I think entrepreneurialism has kind of been made a bit too sexy lately, when actually it's not that sexy.
No.
You fail more than you win, so be prepared for that.
Yep.
The second thing I wrote was find your tribe.
Mm.
For me, it's EO and YPO, which I love, which is a global network of entrepreneurs. And then inside that tribe, I always be a little fish. So whenever my revenue's outgrown everyone else in the group, guess what?
New group.
Time to move.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I love these people. I don't want to. But you have to keep putting yourself in these environments where you feel almost intimidated.
Mm.
By the games that other people are playing. And what's really good about that is not only are you a sponge and you end up getting there a lot quicker, but the things that you stress about that are so little are not little for them. So I remember once I turned up and I'm like, oh, my God, the first lawsuit I've ever had in 20 years, and, you know, it's 100 grand. And they're like, 100 grand? Is that all? And you only one in 20 years. God. Some of us, how many have you got going on? I got 6. Oh, how many you got? 4. All right, okay. And then they told me what their amounts were. And they said, honey, this is a part of doing business.
Wow.
Everyone gets sued. This is how they make money in America. Most people have multiple lawsuits going on at the same time. So it just puts things in perspective, right? Mm. And it means that you don't quit. So I think that's really important, because the stuff that I was losing sleep over, they were like, hello, this is part of doing business. So it's good for that reason. And then the last one that I said is you have to have a relentless thirst for energy, for energy, of course, for learning. So it's easy to be left behind in a fast-paced world, so you need to remain relevant. And I think learning is something you either love doing or not.
Mm.
But I just find that the most successful people are constantly reading, constantly listening to podcasts, always signing up for some sort of course or university, you know, short courses and stuff like that. I find they seem to be doing the best. So there's something in that as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's a few that
was that helpful?
That was really helpful. There's a few that you have that we hit quite often. So that's good. That's excellent.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Consistency is good.
Yes. That's amazing.
It's not that hard, really. No. It's that execution piece and not caring what other people think and just going after it.
Yeah, totally.
Mm.
Now, I could chat to you all night, and we need to talk more business. But if our listeners would like to know more about you and your businesses and your book, how can they find out more?
Okay, so obviously the book, please grab a copy, because all the money, I don't make anything out of it. It's all going to fund women to get microloans to start their own businesses in developing countries. So you can look up the website for the book. It's called Lehrblend, LEHRBLEND.com, and then reach out to me on that. And then, of course, the business, check out dollarbeautytribe.com, sample some of the beautiful products, and look, let's start a conversation. I love chatting to people like you. And anyone who just wants to support each other and believes in abundance. Say hi.
Awesome.
I'm never too busy. People always say, you're always so busy. And I'm like, no, I appear busy. And I'm a master of delegation.
Awesome. We'll pick your brains. Thank you so much, Tamara. We have got absolute gold from you today. So thank you for sharing your insights with us.
Oh, pleasure. It's such a pleasure to watch your journey as well. And I just want to acknowledge you and your great team for everything that you're doing. It's relentless, but you're always out there, you know, leading by example, showing up positively and with abundance and supporting one another and, you know, more like you, the Mary. I cannot speak highly enough for what you guys are doing. So keep it up. Make it global.
Yes.
And, let's go to change lives together, huh?
Yep.
Now is your time to take action and stop being a best-kept secret. Join Hot and Healthy in Business Membership, where we empower you with the confidence, skills, and platforms to promote and grow your business. Go to hotandhealthyglobal.com to join today. Until next episode, stay hot and healthy.